Coming up on today's edition of the Next Fan Up podcast.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Pray for me. This is awful. This is awful. Goodbye. I'm hanging up. Oh, my goodness.
Miami holds its breath. Here we go.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the GOAT edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, everybody. I am Pod Vader here with the Superfans, as I am each and every Thursday. And the GOAT edition, it's happy birthday to Tom Brady. I guess there's another quarterback's birthday today, too. We'll get to that in a moment, but who cares about that? Let's bring in the superfans. I guess I'll just bring them right in. I'll bring in Rob, who's our Buffalo Bills superfan. I guess it's your quarterback's birthday, too.
Can you forget Tyrod Taylor? Come on. He's an ascending quarterback.
It's pretty easy. I mean, this is a milestone birthday for Mr. Brady as well. It's his 40th. He's a man now.
Maybe his last in the NFL? Hopefully.
That's what you're hoping. Exactly. Speaking of hope, there may not be much hope left in Miami. We'll talk about that story in a moment. But our Dolphin superfan is here, Andrew.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Exactly what we needed. But now, you know, this has value because this provides some sort of clarity. Now all those Dolphin Twitter trolls who say Moore is just as good as Tannehill or Kaepernick is better than Tannehill, well, we might find out. We definitely might find out, but this doesn't seem good.
We might find out, or we may not. Like I said, we'll talk about that in just a moment. Neil is our Washington Redskins super fan from across the pond.
Hey, guys. When are we going to find out when Andy became Andrew? Or did Andrew become Andy?
Good question. You know, and I didn't mention that he's calling from prison zone one, which
as
is
always.
Yeah, exactly. A different prison zone than Kevin, who is not with us today from prison zone six. I don't have a good transition. James, who's down in Atlanta, nowhere near a prison zone, our Eagles super fan.
Thankfully, not anywhere near prison zone, and everything looks good in Philly.
Excellent.
Careful, James, careful.
I know. I don't want to jinx it. Knock on wood.
And our newest super fan, he's passed all the tests. He's gone through the hazing. It is our Panthers super fan, Nick. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you, Pod. And here's hoping we can have a constructive conversation today that doesn't involve Cam Newton not diving on a football.
Well, Greg, our Steelers super fan's not on the show today, so I think you'll be okay in that regard. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have tweets or comments for us to discuss on any of our podcasts, because we will be talking about quite a bit of things coming from training camp, send in those questions, comments to our Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can email us nextfanup@gmail.com. And of course, we're on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Those are the easiest ways to get in contact with us and have a conversation, jump in, even if you're not a super fan, even if you're just a regular fan. You know what? Even if you're just a bandwagon fan, we'll talk to you. Trust me, because we are that desperate. Speaking of desperate, Miami could be desperate to fill in their quarterback role. Earlier today, on Thursday, August 3rd, Ryan Tannehill was running off the field towards the sideline and fell down on his knee and went boo-hoo. And now all of Miami is aghast, holding their breath, waiting to find out what's happening. Now, the reason why this is a little bit more concerning is because, one, Adam Schefter of ESPN has tweeted out the Miami Dolphins are concerned, according to a leaked source. But two, I saw a tweet from old buddy Ross Tucker that said Tannehill didn't get surgery on a partially torn ACL in his left knee. So as Andrew started off the show with us, it sounds like you're concerned too.
Just a little bit. That would be an understatement. So this is the same left knee On December 11th, Sunday, December 11th, last year, Ryan Tannehill completes a pass across the middle to Devontae Parker for 15 yards. Problem is, Arizona Cardinals defensive lineman, I forget exactly who it was, hits his knee, out for the rest of the season. And now, a non-contact injury, we all know those are all scary and those all lead to bad things. Non-contact injury along the sideline, he's just gingerly running off, and he limped off the field. This is what's so scary about it. He limped off the field, and then a couple trainers talked to Adam Gase, and then Adam Gase addressed the entire team at midfield, and there's pictures on Twitter of this. So the entire team is taking a knee, helmets off, midfield, listening to Adam Gase say something. That just sounds sketchy, does it not, Pod? Does that not sound very scary?
I mean, you could make it sound scary, but it could also
No.
They're that at training scary. Camp, the coach is giving them some pointers on, you know, how to better defend wide receivers in the end zone.
I'm sure that's what that conversation, I'm sure that's what it was about. But you know what? You know what? This is going to be interesting because Bill Barnwell, who notoriously hates the Dolphins, and for good reason. Bill Barnwell's a very smart, analytical guy, and the Dolphins, even when they're successful, do a lot of things that analytics don't like. Even last year, analytics did not like our team, and we went 10-6. And Bill Barnwell said that Tannehill's weapons are – I'm sure you guys read his weapons article that he put out a couple of weeks ago. He ranked the Dolphins third, and he never says anything good about us. And we do have a lot of weapons, and Matt Moore can step in. Matt Moore can – if Ryan Fitzpatrick can throw 30 touchdowns and around 4,000 yards with a passer rating in the low 90s in a full season, Matt Moore can absolutely do that as well. Now – if our defense is really good, we could still go 10-6. We could also go 4-12. Everything could go wrong now. I mean, things with Tannehill, I'd say that our floor was 8-8 and our ceiling was maybe 11-5. Now, I really do think we have that same ceiling because Matt Moore, Nick, you're a Panthers fan. You are very in tune with what Matt Moore can look like at times. Matt Moore can light it up. He really can. So I think we still have that 11-5 ceiling, but now our floor is like, I want to say 5-11. I think we have too much talent to go like 4-12, 3-13. But this definitely changes things if it's serious.
Quick question. When you say Matt Moore can light it up, are you referring to marijuana?
Whoa.
No. No. Oh, okay. Well, Matt Moore, if you actually look at Matt Moore, he has long hair. He's from California. He's super duper. Yeah, man, bro. He likes soup. Matt Moore has absolutely... He partakes. A lot of football players partake because of the, you know, the pain relieving. Anyway, that's a different conversation for a different time. Matt Moore definitely dabbles, but he lights it up. He lights up the scoreboard. He lights up the passer rating. I mean, you guys probably saw some of the games he threw last year. Nick, as you're a Panthers fan, I believe he threw for 400 yards and then 370 yards the very next week against two very good teams in 2009. I think one of them was the Packers. I might be off on that.
Oh, he was the one that was between Jake Delhomme and Cam Newton. Yep.
Yep. But Matt Moore, in I believe it was 2009 or 2010, he started six games and in those six games threw like 11 touchdowns against like four picks or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys went like 4-2 or something. I think you guys anyway. Matt Moore is competent. He's more than competent. I'm not sure if we were not going to sign Colin Kaepernick, but I'm not sure if Kaepernick is better. Cutler is better, but he's doing, you know, other things. So, yeah, tectonic plates are shifting. That is for gosh darn sure, guys. That is for sure.
So, obviously, at the time that we're recording this podcast, we have no idea what the future of Ryan Tannehill is or even what his current availability is, and it could literally change as soon as we finish recording the show. So playing the what if game, you've mentioned quite a number of people. You've mentioned that you'd be fully okay with Matt Moore being on the team. And now you've brought up Colin Kaepernick, which I think is going to become the next NFL meme, is basically anytime a quarterback goes down, a quarterback got a hangnail, Colin Kaepernick on line one. I think that's basically what this is all going to come down to. So anytime a quarterback goes down, it's going to be Colin Kaepernick. But Rob, you mentioned a reason why Colin Kaepernick won't get the call to Miami. And it has, again, absolutely nothing to do with his on the field ability.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, kind of along the same reasoning with a couple other teams, but specifically for Miami, and Andrew, you know, will know what I'm talking about. This is he had some very pro Castro, Fidel Castro comments last season, which in Miami, more so than anywhere, is a huge no-no. So I would think the odds of him going to Miami are like slim to none.
Well, and then you mentioned Jay Cutler earlier, Andy, and that same Adam Schefter posted on Twitter about Jay Cutler being a guest on his podcast back in the spring. And Jay Cutler said this, quote, "To say, hey, we're going to sign you on Monday and we need you to play on Sunday as a quarterback, that's so challenging. I think Tony," as in Tony Romo, situation with possibly leaving the door open in Dallas, if that's what he's doing, is a little bit more realistic because he knows the system. He knows the guy. He knows expectations. He's comfortable in the building. To go someplace completely foreign and try and learn a whole new system and develop timing with guys, especially on a team in a playoff race, that's a tall order." So to me, it sounds like the door isn't necessarily closed on possibly Jay Cutler. And to me, Jay Cutler would make a whole lot of sense in that Miami offense.
I'd be in support of that. I'd also be in support of Kaepernick. Kaepernick's unrealistic for the reasons we mentioned. I mean, listen, Jay Cutler had his best from an efficiency, perhaps not volume, but from an efficiency standpoint. Cutler had his best statistical season in 2015 under Adam Gase and his tutelage and his just mind. I mean, people call him the Brad Stevens. Now, granted, that could be wishful thinking. Brad Stevens is a fantastic basketball coach. But I the thing with Cutler, though, is his heart just, I don't think, is in it anymore. He's doing the TV thing. And for a guy like Jay Cutler, who, you know, his career has progressed from, you know, drunken, gunslinging frat boy from Denver to guy in Chicago, we gave up the farm. Remember, that was like 2 first-round picks and a third-round pick, and Kyle Orton something for that trade. And then in Chicago, he largely disappointed. The games that he won was because of the defense. Cutler's heart has never really been in it. That's been a main criticism. And now his heart's going to be even less in it because he already has 1 foot out. So for that reason, I don't think it's terribly logical to do that. And that's why ultimately I do want Matt Moore to be the starter for as many of the 16 games as he can. But competition is always good, and I wouldn't be opposed to the Cutler signing, but I just don't think it would work out in the end.
Nick, you in the chat here, what other quarterbacks are we not thinking about that are available right now?
Geno Smith comes to mind as one that could be a
potential. Geno Smith is on the Giants.
Yeah, but he's not starting, is he?
Geno Smith is under contract with the New York Giants. I'm positive of that.
He signed like a 1-year, $3 million deal.
Let me tell you something about Geno Smith. Geno Smith from Miramar High School, Miami boy. He grew up, you know, within walking distance of the stadium. Week 17, 2014, he posts a perfect 158.3 pass rating against the Dolphins. They beat us. This was the season they went 4-12. They were really bad. Geno Smith plays really well in Miami for whatever reason, maybe because he's from there. But that would be interesting, but he's under contract.
And I don't think the Dolphins want to give up draft to talent for Geno Smith. I don't think anybody wants to give up anything for Geno Smith.
Or Garoppolo, by the way. I don't want to throw a bunch of first-round picks at Belichick for Garoppolo. And I think Garoppolo still could be good, but that's something that someone mentioned me on Twitter asking about that. And that's not something that I'm personally not comfortable doing that.
I doubt that New England would trade you Garoppolo, because I do think the reason why he hasn't been traded anywhere is because Belichick does believe that he is the successor to Tom Brady. And unlike other times that he's traded quarterbacks within the division, I don't think he wants to see Garoppolo on a division rival.
I disagree. I disagree to a certain extent. I do think Belichick does believe in Garoppolo, but I think that everybody has a price, especially to someone as shrewd as Bill Belichick. If the Dolphins said 2 first-round picks, 2 second round picks and Devontae Parker for Jimmy Garoppolo, Bill Belichick would do it. I can assure you he would do that.
Well, okay. Anybody would
everyone
do
has
that.
A price. Everyone is a price. Has a price is what I'm trying to say.
Before we let you go, because I know you got to run, and before we move on to some more Colin Kaepernick conversation, Jay Ajayi is in the concussion protocol. Are you worried about that?
I am not worried about that in the least. Especially, it really pales in comparison to the Ryan thing. I mean, Jay Ajayi, let's not play him until the fourth preseason game. I don't even care if he's there for the dress rehearsal. He's a beast. Not worried about him in the least. I will say this, that Adam Gase was not happy that he got a concussion. Obviously, he's not happy about that. But the practice that he got a concussion was so incredibly physical. And Lawrence Timmons, who had been a little underwhelming by all accounts so far, he was the one who popped Ajayi's helmet off. And Ajayi kept running and got hit in the head, and that's where the concussion came from. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a hard-o thing to do, to run without a helmet in training camp, but that's how it happened. I'm not worried in the least, and I'm glad that Lawrence Timmons can still pop helmets off at age 33 or whatever he is.
What's the depth behind Ajayi?
The depth behind Ajayi, I actually got in a Twitter fight with a Patriots fan recently about this who was saying, oh, there's no depth. The depth is actually pretty gosh darn good. First of all, running backs are very, very fungible assets in the NFL these days. Everybody knows that. Second of all, we have Kenyon Drake, a 2016 third round pick. He was Derrick Henry's backup at Alabama. A lot of people had him as a top 50 talent. We got him in the third round. And all you have to know about him is that last year he on offense and special teams combined, he physically touched the football only 47 times. That's less than 3 times a game. And yet he still had 2 touchdowns of 50 plus yards, 1 run and 1 kick return. So he's explosive and good. And we also have a guy named Damian Williams, who the Patriots met maybe you're familiar with this. The Patriots met with Damian Williams. They ended up not signing him, but he's one of those guys that we tendered. And we had to give him a raise because of that. And Bill Belichick, whether it's, you know, Chris Hogan or Mike Gillisley, Bill Belichick doesn't mess around when he wants to meet with a division rival's backup player. He is great at finding value. So Damian Williams, I think, could step in and be good as well.
All right, then. There you go. Latest out of Miami. I'm glad that we had the Dolphins super fan here to react. Andrew, thanks for jumping on. And
bye, guys. Pray for me. This is awful. This is awful. Goodbye. I'm hanging up. Oh, my goodness.
See you, Andy.
All right. Let's move back now to quarterbacks and talk a little bit more about Colin Kaepernick. James, you and I think we opened a Pandora box last week talking about Kaepernick and the Ravens. I think the Ravens obviously took the ball and ran with it and really jacked that box wide open.
Yeah, he did.
I want to be perfectly clear with our points, and especially my point that I made about Kaepernick last week. Again, I have no problem with Kaepernick saying what he wants to say and how he's going to say it. And I mentioned that I will fight till the day that I die, because that is the right you're given in this country. However, you also have the right to deal with the consequences of having a stance that is so against the norm that you're going to end up hurting yourself in the long run. And as was mentioned before, one of the reasons why Kaepernick won't fit in Miami is because of the things he said about a political leader in a country where a lot of those immigrants now reside. So Kaepernick being in Miami is going to hurt the Miami Dolphins from an economic standpoint, even if he's only there as insurance for Ryan Tannehill. And that's the way that I look at the situation right now. The reason why Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job isn't because he's being blackballed. It's because he's going to cost a team too much money in the long run by holding a clipboard on the sideline. That's my stance on Colin Kaepernick. And I don't know if I made that abundantly clear last week. I do agree from a talent standpoint. I mean, the kid has shown potential, but like the coach that I hired to work with my kid this past summer, potential is only going to get you so far, and you got to put the work in. And there has been some questioning about the heart Colin Kaepernick might have in terms of playing the game of football, James.
There I would disagree with you. I don't think it has anything to do with his heart. His heart is in football. I think the issue comes in on that aspect, is owners want him to only be about football, and they don't want him to take the stance that he's taken. And I just go back real quick before anyone jumps on. I am in full support of Colin Kaepernick's protests and how he does it. The things that pretty much irk me the wrong way when I have conversations about Kaepernick and what he did last season and why he did it are twofold. One, people will always say, well, if he had protested a different way, it's protest. There is no right or wrong way to protest. You do what you feel will bring attention to the topic at hand. As long as you're not causing harm to anyone else physically, you're pretty much fine. The other issue I have is the what he was protesting and how everyone wanted to dovetail it into the military. He was never protesting the military. He was protesting the treatment of minorities by cops based on all the shootings that took place. And those tend to be the two biggest points of contention I have when I talk to people about Kaepernick. Sitting during the national anthem, kneeling during the national anthem, not standing for the national anthem, one goes on across every sports venue in every stadium in this country. Living here in Atlanta, I've been to plenty of Falcons games, Hawks games, Braves games, and not everyone stands for the national anthem. People are sitting, they're having conversations, they're walking the concourse, they're at the concession stands, they're on their phones. So I don't understand why this is large outcry about him kneeling or sitting during the national anthem when everyone does it. This is not something that should be cried over or to say, well, he doesn't deserve a job for as long as he lives. That's insanity. And just the way that the Ravens owner is dealing with this is beyond laughable at this point, because let's just go back. And I don't know how long the current Ravens owner has had the team, but this will probably start another conversation that I really don't want to get into. But just real quickly, let's go back to when Ray Lewis had his trial for what he was involved in here in Atlanta. And he was welcomed back with open arms. And Ray Rice was welcomed back with open arms before the video came out. And now the owner of the Ravens wants to poll the public and his endorsers, people who give advertising money to the team. He wants to poll them all of a sudden based on Kaepernick coming in. But a guy who's basically convicted of obstruction of justice in a murder trial, another guy who on video beat his then fiance, now wife, those are okay. But a guy taking a stand for social justice is a problem. And that's the biggest issue I have with the entire Kaepernick discussion, is that people want to turn a blind eye to the social injustice going on in this country, which is perpetuated for a number of years. This is not something that just started yesterday, last month, or last year. This has pretty much been going on since this country's inception. And it hasn't changed or gotten better overall. In some places, yes. And in most places, no. But me being a Black man and not so much sympathizing, but I completely empathize with Kaepernick's stance. I don't like what I'm seeing in the news, where every time I'm seeing unarmed minorities being shot by cops with no questions asked and they go back to work. So yes, that protest, as far as I'm concerned, was the most innocent, peaceful protest that he could do while still wearing an NFL uniform. And the fact that the majority of owners in the league, in a situation where their quarterbacks, let's be frankly honest here, are garbage, even at the starter position for at least 10 to 12 teams, won't even give him a chance to compete for a job, that's the real criminal act, in my opinion.
So I agree with what you said there at the beginning about how this protest has gotten spun into meaning something that it absolutely had nothing to do with. And that is definitely on the media's part. And I think what's really sad and tragic about this is, if Kaepernick ends up getting another job, let's say he does end up playing for another team. Every time he goes to a press conference or has to sit in front of the press is going to ask him about it, because if they don't, they're not going to sell their newspapers, although they're not selling those anyway. They're not going to get those clicks online. They're not going to get those views on television, because that's the crazy thing that they've created in terms of this particular story. This story, for whatever reason, has generated so much interest outside of football that all the media can see are the dollar signs behind what's behind it. And again, the Ravens owner has gone above and beyond to make this a complete and total farce, which is, I mean, the way he's handled it, I mean, he should be kicked out as an owner of an NFL franchise for the way that he's handled this whole situation. Nick, I know you had
the two quarterbacks real quick. And mind you, the two quarterbacks he signed over a span of 5 days since Kaepernick's name was first mentioned was one guy who hadn't thrown an NFL pass, period, and he actually quit college football, and another guy whose only professional experience was the Arena League. And you thought those guys were good enough because you think Mallett is a capable backup. No one across the league believes Mallett is a capable backup.
Well, in defense of those two signings, I'll just say that the Flacco injury, I believe at this point now, we believe that the Flacco injury is not a severe one. And at the time, they were just signing guys to throw a ball. They weren't necessarily looking for Flacco's fill-in at that point. So that's the only defense that I'll have towards signing those particular guys. They were just camp arms, and that could be guys that are going to end up on the team anyway. But anyway, Nick, I know you had some strong feelings about Colin Kaepernick and the whole situation going on surrounding him.
Oh, well, you kind of beat me to it, Pod, by saying it's the media is going to hone in on that. And every single time, whoever he is backing up, whatever that quarterback ends up being, if he doesn't start, wherever he gets signed, the minute that that quarterback makes a mistake, it's constantly going to be surrounded by controversial Colin Kaepernick stuff. Is it time to bring him up? That's all we're going to hear about. And I take nothing away from his skill, from his capability as a player, as a quarterback. But that's not what we're going to hear about when Colin Kaepernick plays football. And that's sad. That's unfortunate. I don't particularly agree with everything that went down last year for various reasons. But at the same time, I understand it. I get it. And James, I agree with you that it's the safest way, the friendliest way to protest something of that nature that doesn't hurt anybody. So do I think on the other side of that there's some responsibility to not draw attention to the team that's constant controversy like that? And yeah, I think in a way he's typecast himself as a personality going forward that could be detrimental to his career for the rest of his life. But at the same time, that doesn't take away from his capability as a player.
Neil, you have an interesting thought.
Oh, I have lots of interesting thoughts. Do you want one on the Kaepernick situation?
Yes, let's stick with this. Okay. The Kaepernick thing right now.
Bruschetti? What's the owner's, Ravens owner? Steve Bruschetti?
Biscotti.
There you go. Sounds like a biscuit. But
I think it is. It's an Italian cookie, is it not?
Yes. Oh, there you go.
But, yes, it is.
Short and husky, so yeah, he looks like a biscuit.
I think the days of making decisions on, let's just say, a controversial player signing, as Kaepernick is in this situation, I think the days of just making that decision, signing him, and living with the consequences are over due to the input of social media. Yeah, I think social media is having a massive input here. If you think back to when the Eagles signed Michael Vick, then I think there was protests for, 3 or 4 days, and it fizzled out. I think then, and if we had the Michael Vick situation today, we'd have the same owner coming out and engaging the feelings of various groups within the fan ownership. So I think, yeah, social media, really interesting aspect here in this situation. I actually think the Ravens are handling it fairly well in terms of seeing it as a consultative process, even though at the end of the day, the biscuit man there will have to make his own decision for his team.
you brought up Vic with the Eagles signing, considering I followed that very closely from when Vic came out of prison. That was, I'll say the situation there, one, obviously completely different. But with where the two organizations were at the time, as far as the Ravens now and the Eagles then, the Eagles was set up to handle that type of drama, if you will, coming into their organization, because Andy Reid had reached out to Michael Vick's representatives and Tony Dungy, who would begin mentoring Vick while he was in prison, if you will. So Andy Reid did full, you know, whatever you want to call it, homework on Michael Vick long before it became a thing of where will Michael Vick sign now that he's allowed to play football again. So that was all done well before. So when it came out, the Eagles were signing him, it was like, okay, we're signing him, we're done, we're moving on. You're right. Protest was probably only 3 days. And even though social media wasn't what it was then as it is now, there was still an outcry against him being on the team. And then that dovetail to Pittsburgh, which I still think is a farce, because I had this argument with Steeler fans when they signed Michael Vick, complaining about him being on their roster. And then I had to bring up the history of their current starting quarterback and his shenanigans that took place, which he's basically gotten off scot-free for. It's funny how people will complain about one thing and overlook another, but when you throw it in their face and let them know, hey, this thing happened too, they're quick to be quiet and not say anything at all. And I got a lot of Steelers fans who pretty much still to this day won't talk to me because I will constantly bring up Roethlisberger's history and his run-ins with the law, opposed to Michael Vick's history and his run-in with the law with dealing with his signing in Pittsburgh. So,
James, can I add one more? James, I just add one more thing there about the sort of social media thing. The best thing that could happen to Kaepernick right now is to sign him, because we have a saying over here in Britain, which is today's front page news is tomorrow's fish and chip wrapper. Exactly. Going back to the days when your fish and chips were wrapped up in a newspaper to keep them warm or whatever.
That's a very good point. The sooner someone signs him, the quicker this will go away.
Yeah, because to sign him tomorrow, and then next day Tannehill's got an ACL, and everybody's talking about that, and it goes away. Exactly. That's the one thing that's hurting Kaepernick at the moment.
You know, the other thing that'll be interesting is if Kaepernick signs with another team and then that quarterback goes down with an injury on another team, it's going to be like, oh, you could have had Colin Kaepernick, but you waited too long. Too bad. Right. Too bad for you. And just to bring this back to the importance of the national anthem, as James mentioned, there are lots of people that don't stand up that are talking during the national anthem. And whether that's right or wrong, I mean, that depends, I think, solely on your own personal beliefs. And just to take it a step further, when the hell did America the Beautiful become so gosh darn important during games? Like, that drives me nuts. Like, we have to take our hats off in the middle of the game to listen to some lousy song singing about how great America is. Like, I don't need to do this. Like, why are we forcing people to do this now twice a game? There we go. I'm off my rocker again. Rob, I'm giving you the last word on this.
Yeah, real quick. And I think this is relevant. A couple days ago, I was in my car and I was listening to on Sirius Satellite Radio, the NFL station, and they were interviewing Joe Banner. And they were interviewing Joe Banner about the Michael Vick signing. Joe Banner was the general manager of the team at the time. And he said, his kind of the way he looked at it initially, you know, kind of before they did anything, you know, they did get a backlash. But what they did is, you know, they kept in constant communication, you know, with their sponsors. They said at the end of the day, they lost less than 10 season ticket holders. And, you know, they kind of had to, you know, get out in front of it with the sponsors and things like that. But really, if you're looking at it from, you know, losing season ticket holders, losing merchandise sales, in this instance with the Eagles, it really didn't affect them quite as much as you would think.
And to that point, we all know how much I hate editing, but the fact that these protests that happened last year cost the NFL viewership is bull. And that's
it didn't.
Jay, that's like the fourth swear word you've had since I've joined this telephone call tonight. Come on. Get a grip.
Nick wants us to talk some football, and there is a football game this evening, and it, we just so happen to have. Yeah, there is. It's let's the take Hall a of Fame.
Let
game.
That settle in for just a second. There's football this weekend, guys.
Well, I'm going to give you 16 minutes of our Cowboys superfan and our Cardinals superfan talking about what they're going to be watching in tonight's Hall of Fame game.
Hi, and welcome to the first preview of the 2017 NFL season for an actual real-life game. Although it is only the Hall of Fame game, it's still something for us football fans who have been craving it for the last 6 months now. I'm here with Brian, the Arizona Cardinals superfan. I'm Kevin, obviously the Cowboys superfan. Brian, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. I'm sitting here thinking about how Kurt Warner, Jerry Jones are going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend. I think it's a fitting way to start the season, having the Cardinals and the Cowboys face off in the opening game. I don't think we're going to be looking for much, you know, to point us towards in the regular season, knowing we are playing in week three. But I think we're going to have a lot of fun watching some young kids run around and try and hit people.
No, I definitely agree. I know Bruce Arians already stated that no starters are really going to be playing for the Cardinals. And I assume the same will go for the Cowboys, but Jason Garrett is always coy with the media. He hasn't really said, but I would imagine if they do, it'll only be one series. But let's get into the Cardinals. You mentioned you're excited to see some young guys, possibly second-year guys, definitely some rookies suit up. Let's hear who you're looking forward to the most seeing tomorrow.
Sure. So, yeah, I think it goes without saying our first and second round draft picks. We're very excited about them in Phoenix. And Hassan Reddick, who is listed as a starter, but is going to play a couple series tomorrow probably. Buda Baker, we got him in the second round. Honey Badger clone, we're really excited to see what he can bring to the safety position. But some of the most fun snaps I'm going to be watching are when our rookie Dorian Johnson lines up at guard, our rookie tackle Will Holden lines up at right or left tackle, and our second-year guard Cole Toner lines up on the offensive line. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I also like Kerwin Williams, backup running back, and practice squad player last year, but very tenacious running back, Elijah Penny. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Based on the quarterbacks that we're going to be trotting out there, the Cowboys should be stacking the box every play because when you have the Blaine Gabbert lining up in the first half and then undrafted rookie quarterback Trevor Knight lining up in the second half to run your offense, it's safe to say it's going to be checkdowns, handoffs, and a lot of little scat back plays. I don't expect much more than that. Another really awesome rookie draft pick that we had from the third round. Bruce Arians loves his third round wide receivers, Chad Williams. I'm really excited to see what he can bring to the offense. Big, strong, physical wide receiver. Arians actually laid into him a little bit in the media last week, saying he needs to get his fitness up. But he has all the attributes of a guy who can basically take over the Michael Floyd position in our offense and keep us moving forward as we're passing the ball downfield. Now, can Gabbert and Knight get him the ball? That remains to be seen. But I think that's going to be the things I'm looking for the most. Some of our bigger players, obviously, as you said, the starters won't be playing, so there'll be no Dansbys, no Carson Palmers. Even our backup quarterback, Drew Stanton's not going to be playing in this game. If that's not a signal to the NFL that five preseason games is too much, I don't know what is. Obviously, in this league, it's a cash grab, so we're going to get as many preseason games as we can. But as fans, unless you are really tuned into the nuances of the game, these games can get really boring really quick. So like I said, offensive line play, Robert Kemdiche might get a few snaps on the defensive line, but I don't actually expect that. So when it comes down to it, Buda Baker, Hassan Reddick, Cole Toner, Dorian Johnson, Will Holden, Elijah Penny, and Kerwin Williams. That's what I'm going to be watching.
Well, sounds good. I mean, just I have a few comments on your Cardinals, and then I guess we'll get into the Cowboys. Regarding Gabbert, I mean, in the beginning of the offseason, didn't Arians have some kind words to say with Gabbert? Do you think Gabbert has – I mean, I think it's not a stretch to say Gabbert and Drew Stanton are on equal playing field. Do you think Gabbert could possibly take over the number two spot over supplanting Stanton, or is that pretty much set in stone that Stanton's there?
Well, based on what the media reports, there's no possible way that that happens. Just some inside pool about the Arizona Cardinals. When Bruce Arians was hired, his first signing as the new coach of the Arizona Cardinals was Drew Stanton away from Indianapolis. He brought his backup quarterback to the desert. One of the reasons he really loves Drew Stanton is for his coach's mind. I think Drew Stanton's going to be someone that's going to be on the coaching staff of a Bruce Arians team after he retires. He really does want to be a starter, but he does not have the talent once the whistle blows and he's on the field. He just makes bad reads, makes bad decisions, gets flustered in the pocket, and it's a bad thing. Now, as it pertains to Gabbert, Arians mentioned right away, you know, he loves his build. He loves his speed. He loves the arm. But again, he has some of the same problems that Stanton has when the whistle blows. He gets flustered in the pocket. He does not make the correct reads. He's got all the arm in the world, but if you're still throwing it a half second late because you're unsure about what you're seeing, any cornerback worth their salt is going to be able to pick that off. And I think we've seen that throughout Gabbert's career, is that he's just a quarter to a half second slow. And in the NFL, that makes all the difference. Now, let me ask you, as a Cowboys fan, when you're looking at this team, are you as excited as I am that you can't be suspended for preseason games? Because otherwise you guys wouldn't even be able to field a team.
Oh, we wouldn't be able to field a team with recently DeMonte Moore just added to the list of suspended Cowboys a few days ago. Yeah, it's fortunate that the suspended players can play. I mean, I'm not sure how much Damian Wilson is going to play. I know David Irving, along with a few other players, aren't even making the trip to Canton, including our fourth round wide receiver Ryan Switzer. They're just dealing with some injuries. They're not long term. They're not serious. They're just playing cautiously here. So David Irving, Ryan Switzer, Justin Durant, who we just signed like 2 weeks ago to give us some linebacker depth because of the Damian Wilson incident and because of the questions surrounding Jalen Smith and whether he'll be 100% ready to go come opening day. So that sort of leads me into one of the things I'll be looking for on Thursday, is to see how the Cowboys linebackers play and who exactly is going to be out on the field. And one name that I'm really interested in is Keenan Cartwright, an undrafted free agent out of Appalachian State, I believe. Very raw kid, but he has speed, athleticism, so much potential. He can run sideline to sideline, great against the run. He's a little iffy in pass coverage, but everything I read about him, he's great one gap attack, just aggressive player. So we'll see how he fares on Thursday. And then another player that I'm looking forward to seeing is another undrafted free agent, Lewis Neal. He probably won't make the team, but Rod Marinelli seems to love him so far in camp, comparing him to our third round pick from last year, Malik Collins, who is very explosive off the ball. Actually was second on our team in sacks last year as a defensive tackle with 5 as a rookie. So I think that's pretty good. So it'll be fun to see Lewis Neal, see what he can do. But really what I'm most excited about is obviously like you are seeing the rookies play. Jordan Lewis actually isn't going to play. He's along with Justin Duran, David Irving, and the rest of them who are rehabbing some minor injuries. But Chidobe Awuzie, I heard he is just making plays left and right at camp. By far the most impressive rookie. So it's going to be interesting to see where, how he plays. I mean, it's just great with him because he has position flexibility as well. So I'm really excited to see him. And then, of course, Taco Charlton, our first round pick. He had a rough start to training camp. He sort of took like a while to get this, the hang of things, pick up the speed. But Marinelli said he's improving. So let's see what he's got. And then our fourth round pick from last year, who missed the entire season, Charles Tapper from Oklahoma. Really, really excited to see him. Great burst off the edge. Huge speed demon. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you want to actually see how fast he is, you can always look up his YouTube video against Alabama 3 years, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, chasing Amari Cooper down the field. So he has got speed. If he can stay healthy, I'm really excited about Tapper. So those are some of the young players I will be looking for. Jalen Smith, I mentioned earlier, it's not definite that he's not going to suit up, but all signs are pointing that he's not going to play. But that's not necessarily a bad sign. He's obviously coming back from major injury. He's participated in two pad practices in a row. So I think things are trending upwards. We're obviously just playing it safe with him. And then his brother, actually Rod Smith, he is looking to solidify himself as the third running back on the team. Alfred Morris has sort of fallen out of favor with the Cowboys. For no wrongdoing of his own, he just sort of not as versatile as the rest of the backs the Cowboys have. So Rod Smith is definitely, I think, going to get the bulk of the carries on Thursday, probably split some time with newly signed Ronnie Hillman. So that'll be fun to see, just to see who we have backing McFadden and Zeke. And then because they're either one of those two is going to push into a bigger role when he gets suspended eventually. So I'm excited to see them. Not really excited to see the offense, honestly. The defense is really what I'm going to be paying attention to. It's super young defense. We got just incredibly young over the offseason. So I'm just really excited to see these youngsters go at it. I mean, I doubt Dak's going to play. If he does, it'll be one series max. Dez is definitely not going to play. So there's not really much to look forward to on the offensive end, unless you're considering Jonathan Cooper trying to win the left guard starting job as entertaining, then I guess you can disagree with me. But you're very familiar with Jonathan Cooper, and I don't think he's very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I was going to say former Arizona Cardinal, Jonathan Cooper. It's amazing how many teams he's bounced around to now. He's an enigma. All the talent in the world, but he does not watch the tape. He does not put it into practice, and he does not have the aggressive mindset you need, the scrappy, I will do anything to pick up those other extra 2 yards for my running back mindset that you need as an offensive lineman. And I'll tell you another couple things to think about as it pertains to this game. This is the first game where we're going to see the newly improved stadium that caused the postponement and cancellation of the game last year. So I don't know about you, but personally, I was very happy to see that all of the starters were pretty much going to be benched for this game, because I am not confident that the surface that they're going to be playing on is NFL quality. Maybe it is. Millions of dollars have gone into this. But I'd rather see a rookie run up and down that field, or I'd rather see some free agents run up down that field trying to win a position before I put Larry Fitzgerald, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, and even Jalen Smith, as you just mentioned before. These are things that are underrated that I'm actually pleased to know that some of these guys aren't going to be playing. And another thing is, we play the Cowboys. We play you guys in week 3. Yep. It's our home opener, Monday Night Football. These are going to be the most bland plays that we're going to be running. I bet you we'll have 5 plays in our playbook, and we'll just run them over and over and over again, because we aren't going to want to give anything away to each other. We're going to want to make sure no one gets injured. So this game tomorrow, it's going to be about who wants it, and it's going to be those interior line positions and who's going to make a name for themselves. That's That's what tomorrow's going to come down to, and everything else around that. Chidobe Awuzie, yeah, I've heard that name. I think Chidobe and Taco and Chidobe could be like the name of a new false sitcom on NBC. But I'm hoping a lot of the big name players are out before the first quarter ends, because I just am not 100% confident in the surface they're going to be playing on tomorrow.
I'm with you. There's no chance anyone who is going to be playing opening day is going to be playing after the first quarter. So, it's the Hall of Fame game. It's even less important than the first preseason game. It literally means less than any other preseason game. But with that said, it's football, right? And I watch any football that you give me. So I'm definitely
We're sure glad it's back, baby.
Exactly. So I'm definitely excited tomorrow. I'll probably be a little underwhelmed when 10 minutes into the game, I'm like, oh, wow, okay, all these players aren't going to make the team. Let me go make some dinner. But I just want to mention one last player on the Cowboys, Xavier Woods, our sixth-round pick. Forgot to mention him. Really excited to see him also. Safety out of Louisiana Tech, I believe. Super versatile. All the skills to be a playmaker, 14 career picks in college. So he's got a lot of hype surrounding him, especially being a sixth round pick. But we'll see how it goes. And as you said, we're not going to show much because we will be playing you week three. And in that game, obviously Carson Palmer will be leading you. We'll have a conversation week three about that. I'm not necessarily scared of Carson. But with that said, I wish you all the luck tomorrow, and I hope no one gets injured on the Arizona Cardinals for you.
Same for you. Safe travels to Canton, and hope everyone returns healthy.
All right, there goes Kevin and Dr. Jones talking about the Hall of Fame game. You know, the thing that's driving me nuts is we are so starved for football. We're going crazy over a bunch of second string and third string and fourth string and guys who aren't even going to play in the NFL this season playing tonight in a high school football stadium that's connected to the church of the NFL. Which, by the way, is also a misnomer because it is the Pro Football Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame. I am, however, intrigued by the fact that Blaine Gabbert, the real American, is starting at quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals and not one of those other backups that has been with the Cardinals for a while. That, I think, is going to be an interesting quarterback situation, just because we know Carson Palmer is sort of near the end of his career. Seeing where that position evolves for the Cardinals moving forward is one that I will be intrigued with. Plus, I have a lot of I put a lot of weight on the Cardinals to win the NFC West this season, and I'm starting to regret that already. So that's what I'm watching tonight.
Carson Palmer hit away from losing it all.
LaDainian Tomlinson going into the Hall of Fame, inducted into the Hall of Fame on Saturday evening, which I think is interesting. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about his career and sort of his place as the GOAT running back in the NFL.
Well, it's not so much that. It's more about it's time to start giving him that kind of just recognition and be in that conversation with the Jim Browns, the Walter Paytons, the Emmitt Smiths, the Barry Sanders. I think he, if you look at the stats that he had over the course of his, what was it, about 10 years in the NFL, it's amazing what that guy did throughout the 2000s. Go back and replay some of the fantasy stuff that we went crazy over in, you know, the mid to late 2000s. Everybody rushed to try to get LT. So the numbers that he put up with the Chargers, who frankly weren't that good, but he still managed to put up Hall of Fame style numbers over the course of 10 seasons, is really, really impressive. And I feel like he's not generally included in that class of elite running backs. And I think he absolutely needs to be and has earned that. And that's just a general sentiment that I wanted to bring forward.
Nick, here's where I disagree with you just slightly. Definitely one of the best, if not the best, of his era. as far as when he played. But when you're talking about all-time greats and you mentioned, you know, Walter Payton and Jim Brown, I don't know if he's necessarily in that class, probably a notch below them. Like, whatever the next tier is after those guys, he'd be right there. I would definitely put him there. But I wouldn't put him in the same class as a Jim Brown and a Walter Payton.
Why not, if you don't mind me asking?
He's definitely skilled in the comps. But one, his teams pretty much were either grossly overrated and underperformed, or he was the only thing on that team. He had to carry a lot. And there was really nothing much around him. Now, granted, like I said, best of his era, yes, because of that. Because there are times that he basically carries his team. And honestly, who's the quarterback out there in San Diego? L.A. Chargers right now. Phillip Rivers. I don't think Phillip Rivers is still playing without LaDainian Tomlinson, honestly. So there is that to lean on. There's just something about the previous eras of football where, and I guess it's probably just the rules, how the rules have evolved or, you know, either lessened or heightened in the past. I just can't put him up there, not with Jim Brown and Walter Payton. And frankly, Eric Dickerson, who doesn't get enough cred either.
Agreed.
You know, as far as all-time greats, those are the guys that I think belong up there. And again, it's not a knock against LT, Tomlinson. It's just I can't put him tier one. If we're talking all-time greats, he's definitely tier two with potential to be tier one. I think probably being further removed from his playing days, he might get in that tier one as far as all-time greats, but I have him tier two personally.
Is that an emotional feeling or is that a stats-based kind of feeling based on rankings of production?
I try to
think the emotional level, I kind of agree with you, but if you look at the numbers, it's hard to argue.
It is, but it's with Jim Brown, what, is still the only running back in NFL history to average 5 yards to carry for his entire career?
Yeah, and I believe LT was up at like 4.6, 4.7, something
four,
like
six,
that.
4.6, 4.7. So, yeah, I mean, he's up there, but I mean, he was close at one point. Everyone thought he would do it because I think at one point during his career, he was like 4.9 or something like that.
Right.
But
no, he was definitely dancing with the 5-0 and everybody got really excited. But I agree with you. Yeah. He did carry the pick the Chargers team up and carry them for about 3 or 4 seasons there. And that kind of, you know, contributed to the number of touchdowns, the number of passes, the number of yards, his yards per carry, all of those stats. They are massive in a very compact period of time. And that's what really gets my attention. And just to what a world class man he was. Never any real controversy around it. I think he only got injured once, and that was a turf toe thing, if I'm remembering right. God, it was 10 years
ago. Yeah, which hurt. Yeah, and that was pretty much the year they had the best record, lost the AFC Championship to New England.
Now, right. I wonder what team. Yeah.
So, yeah, this was – I James, I mostly agree with you. From an emotional level, it's hard to even talk about that being a reality with when you talk about greats like Payton and Brown, but – man, the numbers don't lie.
But I think the one knock I have against them, and I'll just say this real quick, is there wasn't a lot of postseason success. And not so much that they didn't have opportunities. It's just that they would have won and done a lot in the postseason.
Yeah.
And that probably hurts him to where – and I don't know if it's the teams got up for him or he just had an off day or the line didn't perform. You know, I have to go back and revisit a lot of those postseason games. But with the exception of them getting to the AFC Championship game where both he and Rivers got hurt, because I think that game also Phillip Rivers, like, tweaked his knee and they found out he was playing on a torn ACL or something like that.
Are there 5 other guys, that running backs all-time, that knock him out of your top 5?
Dale Sayers, Jim Brown. This is no particular order. Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson. Then Emmitt Smith, that's 6.
That's fair. I don't have Emmitt Smith over LaDainian Tomlinson. He's a compiler.
He is a compiler, and again, Emmitt Smith is not my top 5. He only comes in at number 6.
Yeah. Emmitt Smith took advantage of a massive offensive line that they had in the 90s that Jerry Jones is kind of rebuilding again. It's funny to see all that come.
Well, I could also knock Emmitt Smith down and put Marshall Faulk above him at 6.
I don't know if I'd put Marshall Faulk above LaDainian Tomlinson at this point.
I think Faulk was probably more of a dual threat than Tomlinson was. And that's only because of opportunity, because they didn't really throw the ball or design pass plays for Tomlinson. to catch the ball out of the backfield.
And Tomlinson was a better runner. Falk, I think, was a better receiver out of the backfield, but Tomlinson was a better running back.
Looking back at Falk's early days, remember Indianapolis when Peyton Manning got there, he pretty much was leading the league in rushing those couple of years before he got traded to the Rams.
I don't know.
Okay, Marshall Falk and LaDainian Tomlinson have career 4.3 average.
I mean, it's a great discussion to have, and it's wonderful that we're having it, but I mean, there's no wrong answer here. Like, yeah,
and just
it's great. It just, you know, the comparison against Falk is a great discussion. I think with Falk, it pretty much comes down to personal preference, honestly.
Just in terms of accuracy, Jay, that has been a recent aim. Barry Sanders finished with a career 5.0 average carry in his career.
Okay, so Barry Sanders as well.
And Rob, you had an interesting point about Tomlinson.
Well, I think first off, we were just talking about him not being a good receiver. In 2003, he caught 100 balls.
Oh, like, I didn't say he wasn't a good receiver.
No, I know.
I just said that Falk was a better.
Falk is far and away. I think Falk might be the better receiver, but I think it's pretty close. I mean, and when you consistently, Tomlinson is getting, if you look at his yearly career stats, 55 to 70 catches every single year until, between 2001 and 2008, and still did it in 2010 and 11. I think he's a great back. He might be in my top five. I think he does get propped up a touch only because when he kind of came into the league, and this was mentioned, he was clearing away the number one fantasy football guy to have. Like, it was when he was in the league, it was a huge advantage to get the first overall pick when he was in the league.
And a lot of that had to do with his pass receptions and because of PPR leagues and the advent of those coming into fantasy.
Right. But that's when fantasy football blew up.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, that was, their guy in general. So I think, as more and more people got into fantasy football, as it, it's kind of grown to what it is now. But back then it was just, that's when it started, the seeds were planted for it to get really big. And, he was the guy. So I think that definitely helps his cause from, a regular fan in regards to how good he is. That being said, I do think he's a obscenely good back. I think that I may put him in my top five. I think it's pretty close.
Well, we did have this conversation about the greatest of all time at running back last season. We even had both Matts, Chatham and Williamson, the scout and the player, sort of go back and forth on the greatest running backs of all time. Tomlinson came up during that conversation. And I believe we did ultimately say that Tomlinson deserved to be in the top five, but let's do a quick top five survey. James gave his. Rob, why don't you give yours?
Well, Barry Sanders is my number one. And that may be a little bit, sentimental, but he's the best running back I've ever seen. I think that Brown from Cleveland, I would put in the top five for sure. Because he was just so far ahead of his time. Man, this is kind of tough. I want to say Gale Sayers, but I don't think he did it long enough. Like, he had a real short stretch.
5 years.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you couldn't, possibly. I don't think that Emmett Smith, I think, for the reasons that were already covered, he's definitely not, he's not in my top five. I would put LT in my top five. I would put them. I might even put Falk. Now that I think about it a little bit, OJ, I'm going to put OJ Simpson in because I'm from Buffalo. Duh.
Forgetting about Walter Payton in there.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Walter. Jesus.
Neil, give me five.
Well, Jay, as you know, with these lists, I always only go with the players I actually saw play. Because we hear about Simpson or Brown or whatever.
I saw highlights of Simpson.
Yeah, good for you. I would certainly put, you underestimate, I think, with Emmett Smith, although he's a Dallas player and, I'm no great fan of him, obviously, but his ability to churn those yards out week after week, season after season, that's also a hugely important aspect of any running back's play. So I would certainly have Emmitt Smith in there. Walter Payton too. I would have Eric Dickerson, a favorite of mine when growing up. What a player he was. And Marshall Faulk. But of course, number one for me too is not only the best running back I've ever seen, the best with Lawrence Taylor, the best NFL player I ever saw, and that was Barry Sanders.
All right, Nick, you're five.
Well, I guess I've had some time to think about it since everybody else has been going through theirs. I really have to agree that Barry Sanders is part of that conversation, and I hate that we didn't think of him initially. But yeah, it's going to be Jim Brown, Walter Payton. I like that Eric Dickerson's getting thrown into the conversation, but I'm not 100. He's right there teetering on that top five. So Jim Brown, Payton, I think LaDainian Tomlinson is part of my top five. Barry Sanders, and I'm going to throw Emmitt Smith into the top five.
Yeah, I don't recall, so please don't hold me to this five. I gave my five a year ago, and of course I can't remember it. But I would go, I believe I went Sanders, Brown, Tomlinson, Payton.
Curtis Martin?
No, certainly not Curtis Martin.
Ouch.
Number four all time.
What did Curtis ever do to you?
He left. That's what he did. Stinker.
Number four all time. Left
for that disgusting team in green. By the way, breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. Breaking news from Adam Schefter's Twitter. The 49ers are planning to release wide receiver Bruce Ellington today. He's recovered from last season's torn hamstring. By the way, Adam Schefter, if you're going to throw in tweets randomly throughout the day, you need to say this has nothing to do with Ryan Tannehill at the beginning of your tweet. Because as soon as I saw the notification, I was like, oh my God, we've got Tannehill news. No, we don't.
Curtis Martin is number four all time, Jay.
Curtis Martin, much like Emmitt Smith, is a compiler. Curtis Martin was good. I don't think he was great. He's certainly not Hall of Fame worthy. Same thing with Jerome Bettis. Same thing, by the way, with fellow inductee this weekend, Terrell Davis. These guys were good. They were certainly really good at the time that they played the game. But do I think that they were the greatest of all time? No, I do not. And honestly, we didn't mention Jerome Bettis at all. If you don't get brought up in the conversation of the greatest of all time, you don't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Curtis Martin is in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
He is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he went in last year.
There's also Earl Campbell, good player, Earl Campbell. Herschel Walker.
Yeah.
And from Monty.
Herschel Walker.
Monty, Bo Jackson.
Bo
Jackson's not in the Hall of Fame, and unfortunately never will because of us stinking Bengals. That Cincinnati Bengal who just fell down his leg and popped his hip out of socket.
By the way, I'm sure Monty's screaming at his iPod right now, although iPods no longer exist, apparently. Screaming at his iPhone right now, Marcus Allen, another name to be considered. And you mentioned in the chat here, Neil, that of course no one can see. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Roger Craig, the former 49er,
ooh,
and Marshall Faulk, the only that have done 1,000.
No, the only 1,000.
No, he's not the only one. Marshall Faulk did it too.
Yeah, Faulk and Craig, the only two.
Craig did it first, but Faulk did it as well.
Yeah. We sort of skipped over a lot of the training camp news that I was hoping to talk about. There's still a few that I do. One in particular involves the unlucky Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego. They lost their rookie guard Forrest Lamp to an ACL injury on Wednesday. And of course we all know about the back injury to their rookie wide receiver, Mike Williams, earlier in training camp. Word hasn't come out if Williams is going to play or not, although it is mostly unlikely he's going to play this season. And they are concerned that he is not going to play this season. Chargers, again, I'm feeling really comfortable with the Chargers being last in that AFC West division, Rob.
Yeah, they, That's a tough. I didn't get the pick to begin with. Lamp I like, but you know, now with Williams, they have decent receivers on that team. They always seem to get all their guys injured early. I think last time I was on the pod, I mentioned a stat that the last time their first round pick played all 16 games was Ingram in maybe 2009 or maybe 2012. It's been a while. So they're a snake bit team. I expected things to maybe go a little better this year. I liked what they did in the draft, with the exception of the first round pick. I liked, you know, the two guards that they signed, but man.
James, how are you feeling about the Los Angeles Chargers? I still want to call them San Diego. I got to remember, Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego. There we go.
Well, on the forefront, you think and picking a wide receiver is good considering what happened to them last year. I mean, their entire receiving core was decimated by injuries by week 5, basically. Williams' injury does raise a giant concern and a red flag. That would make me wonder how many other teams knew that this might be a problem, going forward, and just shied away from him. He is currently on the PUP list, so they can bring him off at any time when they feel he's ready to play. He should get some run this season. The Chargers, again, right now, their entire offense hinges on the arm of Phillip Rivers. So he can pretty much chuck it to anybody as long as they have a pair of hands and two good feet. So if that core can stay healthy, maybe 500, but I don't see how they can make any headway against the other teams in the AFC West, especially the Broncos and the Raiders. I can't make heads or tails of that team. As long as Phillip Rivers has been the quarterback of that team, you never know what to expect. You know, years people think they're good and they're the best team in the league. They struggle to get to the playoffs, and then when everyone counts them out, they get to the playoffs and, you know, shock the world by winning a division as well. So I honestly don't have any good feelings about the Chargers.
I think it's tough for the Chargers again to get the injuries, but terrible to see that the light's gone out on Forrest Lamp's season. But I think they'll cope with Williams. I think they'll cope with Williams as a loss, but he's not a loss for the season yet, is he? He's just taking it easy at the moment. See how it goes with his injury.
He's still up in the air, and that's sort of a point that I want to get to, because we've been so starved of football for so long that any sort of news out of training camp, any sort of little injury that comes out of training camp, we're overreacting on social media. Like, oh my God, the season is over. And for some of these, you know, the injuries are quite serious, and for others, it's not. But before we get into a couple of other injuries, Nick, you're in the Los Angeles area. What is the thoughts on those Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego?
I have to come at this from two different angles. I have to come at this as a tax-paying citizen of Los Angeles, and I also have to come at this as a football fan. As a tax-paying citizen of Los Angeles, we are on the precipice of getting what might be the biggest bassassist stadium in the league. In 2019, a couple seasons removed from that yet. It is completely overhauling the way that the metro and public transportation works, getting in and out of LAX. It is really making a difference. There's a little bit of stuff that, if you're familiar with Los Angeles, it's going to be put in Inglewood, the south central area of Los Angeles. It's really going to bring some new business to that area and maybe even, you know, revitalize that whole area. That said, for Los Angeles, great. That said, as an individual fan of football living in Los Angeles, we just got the Rams back. And they're not even in their new stadium yet. And now this got dumped on us a few months ago, and it was like, okay, now we have two teams that don't have a stadium. So it's one of those things that, you know, and it was too expensive to go to an actual Rams game last year. I went to one Rams game. I was so excited to have football back in Los Angeles. I went to one Rams game, and it was the better part of $1,000 for the four of us to go to a kind of a general admission seat with concessions and all of that kind of stuff. I'd rather that's several seasons worth of Sunday ticket. So I don't know that I'll be going to a lot of games, even though we're going to have two of them here in a couple of years.
Ouch. Yeah, that's 5 years of Sunday ticket.
That's the thing. Like, I don't get why people would pay that amount of money, but there are people that are going to pay it. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me in terms of pure economics.
Yeah.
Other injury news that actually does matter. Will Fuller, the speedster wide receiver with the Houston Texans, broke his collarbone during practice on Wednesday.
Ouch.
Yeah, my guess is he's gone for the season. If not for the season, he's gone for most of it.
You think so?
Well, it's a broken collarbone, dude.
Yeah,
I've had what understanding they're trying to avoid surgery.
Yeah.
Surgery will put them out for the season, which is what they're trying to.
It's not a big thing, the broken collarbone. He should be able to come back from that.
Yeah, but when? Rob saying 3 months is the. So, I mean, we're talking the.
Heard it on Twitter. Must be true.
Yeah, we're talking about the second half of the season. Injury news that we don't know if this is important yet or not. The Titans wide receiver Corey Davis is getting an MRI on his hamstring.
This is a big deal.
Yeah, well, I was going to steal your line, Nick, but now since you jumped in, go ahead.
No, specifically, I'll let you have the line if you want it. No, this is a big deal. Fifth overall pick from Western Michigan, great receiver, great build. He was going to do great things in fantasy. I really hope he's okay, because that's going to throw a lot of fantasy mock drafts way out the window if this guy goes down. So, yeah, this just in, rookies are pulling hamstrings in training camp. I mean, breaking news, right? This happens every year with all teams. The guys got to learn how to stretch properly. And that's even for the veterans. They have to relearn what it's like to wear pads in the heat, in where they do training camp, and having not properly stretched themselves for a good 6+ months. So,
and also, Nick, add into that hydration.
That too.
Proper hydration, always important.
Oh, Jay, it couldn't be more important. It's as important as Nick quite rightly saying that the stretching is important. Hydration is equally as important.
No, I'm not underplaying it. If I sound like I am, I apologize. What I will underplay is an injury that everyone went, oh my God, I can't believe this. The New York Giants, Sterling Shepard, apparently sprained his ankle. He was taken away on a cart as a precaution, but right now they are optimistic it is just a low ankle sprain. So everything looks to be okay for Sterling Shepard with the New York Giants. One other new piece of news for the Houston Texans, J.J. Watt practiced again. He had a wow play in camp. Again, these types of news stories are really, really not necessary. Julio Jones, though, coming off of his foot surgery, did finally practice in contact drills during training camp, his first 11-on-11 reps yesterday. So that's good news for the Atlanta Falcons. Who, of course, we know will quit about 3/4 of the way through the season.
Oh, and I'm also seeing that Seahawks Malik McDowell, who had that ATV accident, reported to camp today. That's great news for the Seahawks.
Well, he's going straight to the NFI. Apparently.
James, your team has had a couple of minor injuries, but LeGarrette Blount still hasn't shown up to practice, no? Or has he been practicing and has just missed a few?
She probably just missed a few practices. He's been there. The only big injury right now is Alshon Jeffrey fell on his shoulder, so they're taking precautions there. Other than that, as far as I know, everything else is fine in Philly. For now, not on wood.
Nick, not to pile on with Cam Newton, because we know he's not going to pile on. He's missed a couple of days with a sore right shoulder, so he's not throwing the football.
I'm gonna remember you did that.
Well,
the minute Tom Brady gets pummeled and gets his shoulder taken out in about probably what, game four? Let's call it that. No, it's just look. It's quarterback arms. It's training camp. You know, it's just sore. He had his shoulder throwing arm shoulder rebuilt on the off season. He's been doing passing drills all week. The past couple of days, he's sat out. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with Cam Newton.
The Los Angeles Rams are still waiting to see Aaron Donald. Apparently, Sean McVay, when asked about if he's hopeful to see Aaron Donald, he said, quote, "I'm hopeful to see Aaron Donald at any time." That's probably the only person saying that, certainly not opposing teams. My team, the New England Patriots, they're banged up at camp. Matthew Slater, Chris Hogan didn't finish practice. Matthew Slater, the special teams captain. Edelman's been a little banged up. I wonder how much of Edelman was banged up because he decided to get into a fist fight with Stephon Gilmore a couple of days ago at camp, Rob. What is that all about?
By the way, fun fact, that whole little thing started because Gilmore was holding a wide receiver. Get used to that. You're going to spend your money very well with him. You'll be regretting that signing in about a year, buddy.
I seem to remember Brandon Browner had a similar problem with holding wide receivers.
He loves it.
Gilmore never showed so much fight in his Buffalo days, though, did he, Rob?
No. Not very nice.
Pittsburgh Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger was coming to bat for one of his big weapons, Martavius Bryant, saying that he believes that the receiver has, quote, paid his dues with the league and should be reinstated. It's an interesting take, I suppose. By the way, I'm just scrolling down here. Oh, here's good news for me, at least. My boyfriend's the Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, finally found the end zone, and it wasn't a man on defense. It was actually Marquise Lee, the wide receiver. So that's good to see. Again, who's putting out these types of reports, and why are we caring so much? For you, Neil.
Real quick, for Pod, for your boyfriends, I believe the first report came out Saturday that he threw like five straight interceptions. And then earlier this week, it was, he threw 11 passes in a row with no interceptions and like two or three touchdowns. I'm like, okay, good. But he's still throwing the ball to the other team five straight times 2 days ago. And now we're making a big deal about him throwing the ball to his own person in the end zone like he's supposed to do.
Right.
Doesn't look good for your Jaguars.
Well, listen, I'm just hoping that they're going to run the ball a lot with Leonard Fournette, and we're not going to have to worry so much about Bortles trying to throw the ball.
Is that your number one fantasy pick?
I don't know, Jay.
I don't know about my number one.
There's great problems here, Jay. Ever since you started giving them your love with what we had with a Dante Fowler who kept seeing you in his wing mirror and had to speed away at high speed and got in 12 tickets, and then Brandon Albert. He heard you were there, and he retired and left $3.4 million on the table just to get out of there. And then now we've got, Bortles? He sees you pass rushing him in his mind, and he throws five picks. I mean, it's just falling apart for those Jags. Your fault. All of it.
Well, the top news article for you, or the top report for you, Neil, on the Washington Redskins is Terrell Pryor made a highlighted one-handed catch in the end zone on practice on Tuesday.
In light of all the injuries and holdouts we're talking about, I refuse to talk about Washington. Move on.
Rob, your birthday boy quarterback apparently had an up-and-down practice on Wednesday as he lost the ball as he threw it, hitting the back of center Eric Wood. Not quite a butt fumble, but pretty close.
That's fine. Listen, it's a preseason. It's training camp. I don't care.
But Zay Jones is looking good, huh?
Zay Jones is looking good. Just focus on the positive, Pod. Just focus on the positive.
The Kansas City Chiefs signed defensive lineman Roy Miller to a one-year contract. I don't necessarily know how big of a deal that is for the Chiefs. Looks like Chris Jones had arthroscopic knee surgery earlier this summer, so looked like they're filling some depth there for the Kansas City Chiefs.
We still have various holdouts, don't we? Donald Penn, the left tackle. Is he left tackle, for the Raiders? Le'Veon Bell hasn't shown up.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the status of Le'Veon Bell? Does anybody have any kind of insider info on that?
I mean,
he won't show up until the end of preseason.
Really?
And if that early.
And that's what Greg wants. Greg would be more than happy to see Le'Veon Bell show up at the end of the preseason.
Yeah, he's probably chilling somewhere. Snap. No, chilling somewhere in a cloud of smoke.
Le'Veon is actually working out. It's probably not NFL-style conditioning, but he is doing some daily workout regimen, I believe, in Miami is where he is.
Really? Interesting. Donald Penn is interesting because he's part of that offensive line that many think is competing for the title of best offensive line in the league.
And he's also in part of that offensive line, and most of them have just got paid.
Very true. You also mentioned Rob Ninkovich for my Patriots. Yeah. I did forget to mention the blue collar lunch pail guy whom I like to call Mike Vrabel Jr. because he wore the same number and literally played the exact same way. He takes all of those things as a chip on his shoulder, and I say those things as compliments to Rob Ninkovich. He's the kind of guy that you hope is on your team because he does everything he possibly can to overachieve. And again, it's one of those words that people sometimes take offense to, but it's meant as a total and complete compliment because Rob Ninkovich, I think, was one of was very few where he had three straight 8-plus sack seasons in the last 10 years, something like that. I don't know. I'm making stuff up.
What's amazing with a player like that is that they're so undervalued. Every team wants to have their 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 players, but if you're going to win championships and be consistently good, it's those 7 out of 10 guys you need who turn up week in, week out and put in that solid performance. He's been a terrific player. Wish he was a Washington Redskin.
He really is. So he won't be a Hall of Famer, but there's a good chance I could see Rob Ninkovich in the Patriots Hall of Fame someday down the road. All right, let's finish. Let's wrap things up here. Nick, you got some final thoughts?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to give some highlights. There wasn't a lot of like huge news of injuries or crazy stuff coming out of Panthers camp, just a lot of really good stuff. But I thought I'd end it on a fun nugget. Christian McCaffrey, it looks like he's going to have a really good personality throughout the season too, because he did his kind of first press interview thing, actually sitting at the table with the mic in the press room. And I think one of the media people from the media asked him about if he got to see Game of Thrones. Long story short, he basically admitted that even though he just got this massive signing bonus, he's still using his parents' login to watch HBO. So I thought that was hilarious. You know, the innocence of a rookie not understanding that what he just did. But on that note, the reason we are so excited about this kid is that there's a video now from training camp from day 7, I believe, from yesterday, where he absolutely not once, not twice, not three times, not five times juked what I would consider one of the top defensive players in the league, and that's Luke Kuechly. And there's not many people that can say they've done that. And I temper this by saying, yes, I know it's training camp, but Luke Kuechly has one gear, and that's kill whoever has the ball. And to see CMC dance around Luke Kuechly that way was very, very impressive. I can't wait to get to the fantasy drafts here in the next 3 to 4 weeks and kind of see where this kid starts going.
Nice. By the way, I skipped over Jamal Adams. He had some interesting quotes about head injuries. I think a lot of it was taken out of context for the New York Jets.
Definitely.
There is a podcast on Blog Talk Radio called The Sports Palace, P-A-L-L-A-S. That's Mike's last name. So a clever play on words there, Mike. I recommend you check that out to listen to a little bit more on Jamal Adams and the New York Jets, because I certainly am not going to be listening to it. Rob, your final thoughts here with Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills are the... not really too much right now, but the GM did say that he still is having ongoing talks with both Anquan Boldin and Gary Barnage, the tight end. Be nice to get one, at least one of those guys into camp, I think Barnage more specifically, just be kind of an add of depth, you know, the Bills, their new offense, they're going to run a lot of two tight end sets. I think that'd be a good get for him.
How has Barnage not been linked to Baltimore? Or is he also kneeling during the national anthem? I mean, if there's a team that needs a tight end right now, Baltimore should be on the phone.
Because he listens to the podcast and he knows that I jinxed him.
All right, Neil, what do you if you're not going to talk about Washington, give me, well, never mind. You said you're not going to talk about Washington. James, your final thoughts here on the Eagles.
Just to round it back to LeGarrette Blount, he was excused again from practice for personal reasons. We don't know what those are. Hope everything is okay. And with
he's
the Eagles,
chilling with Le'Veon.
Hopefully not, because LeGarrette has actually been in practice. But yeah, not much noise outside of that. And Alshon Jeffery's shoulder injury, which they're holding him out as a precaution. Just, you know, again, training camp / preseason, whole lot of training, not much camp.
By the way, I got breaking news again here, gentlemen. Patrick Mahomes has thrown his first interception in training camp. Get used to that, Kansas City. Neil, I'll give you the final thought on the show.
Oh, I have no final thoughts, Jay. I'm sitting here watching the tour of Utah, the cycling tour of Utah, and I've got to say, Utah looks like a lovely place.
I have been to Utah.
I believe Rob is not a fan, though. Rob is not a fan of Utah.
No?
Well, you have to, like, no, show...
Their bars used to be social clubs that you had to sign up for, and they'd only give you airplane bottles. There was no free pouring in Utah until the Olympics got there. So, right. Therefore, as someone who likes to have a cocktail or two, I am not a fan of Utah.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. We are part of the Two Pods a Day campaign going on right now on the internets. Go to # Two Pods a Day on Twitter. You can also join the Facebook group on Facebook, Two Pods a Day. Every day through the month of August, you can listen to a brand new podcast. Two podcasts will be featured during the entire month of August. You're going to hear us eventually. We'll be featured during this campaign, but we will be retweeting those posts every day at NFU Podcast on Twitter, so that you can check out a non-football podcast, because I know that you all probably have interests other than football, like, you know, CMC enjoying Game of Thrones on Mom and Dad's Bill. That's the sort of thing that we like to bring to you here on the Next Fan Up podcast. Send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can always follow us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/NFU podcast. Remember, tell all your buddies about this show. You don't want to miss any of our podcasts. We'll have another one coming up for you early Monday morning. They tape sometime during the weekend, probably on Sunday, so they'll have lots of reaction, I'm sure, to the Hall of Fame induction speeches that will be happening Saturday evening. Enjoy the game tonight. And if you do miss it tonight, you'll still have something to look forward to, because it'll be replayed on the NFL Network at least 4 or 5 times before everybody else kicks off next week. So until then, here comes Landry Jones, who I'm sure will start a preseason game or two here for the Steelers. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.
When you say 16 minutes, is that like 15 minutes of Kevin and 1 minute of Brian? And what did you think? Over under, he mentions Romo 5 times.